of green, red roses too. I see them blue.
This is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News, and your broadcast host today on Global Radio Talk Show.com, coming to you from the New York area and also from San Diego, California. Very special guest today is Peter Clark with PwC. Topic today is mobility, the power of mobility, rethinking mobility. Peter is a global practice leader of PwC's Global Mobility Group, a specialized practice at PwC comprising over 7,000 dedicated professionals in 250 cities and 140 countries supporting multinational organizations and their cross-border employees. Let's welcome Peter.
Hi, Ed. Nice to be with you.
Peter, tell us about yourself briefly and about your own client experience.
Okay, interesting, Ed. My background is that I've actually been in our mobility practice for about 33 years. Graduated from school and joined our mobility practice in New York and have had a very exciting career helping our clients manage mobility. It's an area that has changed, as you can imagine, quite dramatically over the last 33 years, but it's a tremendously exciting business that encompasses a lot of different issues, both technical issues and human resource issues. So I've had a fascinating career and I'm happy to share some of my experiences with you today.
Well, thank you. And our chat today will be about the report, the Modern Mobility Survey 2014, that PwC conducted, interviews with global HR, reward and mobility leaders. So tell us, how can companies make sure that their global talent mobility program is a fit for the future? Now, I know this conversation can go on forever, but can you just summarize really quick about why this report was done, and then we'll get into some detail.
Well, I think the most important dynamic that we're seeing at PwC is that mobility is changing very dramatically. And when I started in the business 30-plus years or so ago, there was one form of global mobility, and that was a traditional long-term assignment where a company might come to you, Ed, as an employee and say, we'd like you to go to the UK and spend 4 or 5 years there and do a particular job and come back. And it was a full relocation and with your family. Today, traditional long-term assignments still exist. But today we're seeing mobility really kind of mutating into a number of different forms, principally around more short-term assignments, more frequent business travel. We like to say at times that it's kind of mobility without moves in terms of we don't have formal relocations anymore. And really, mobility has gone mainstream. There are organizations that we deal with today where the vast majority of people in the organization are having mobility experiences. So it has changed quite dramatically in the last years.
Are companies measuring the ROI? Are they able to measure a return on this investment?
It's a fascinating question, and it probably is one of the hardest things multinational organizations do around their mobility programs, because the value of these programs at times is really hard to measure. And I think it was easier when the mobility was more traditional, as I mentioned before, kind of 3 to 4 year assignments. But I think the first problem for organizations is that actually the systems that are in place in organizations to kind of hold the data, to do data analytics on information about program costs, they don't exist, and organizations are struggling. Typically, mobility, although it's been very important to an organization's business plan, has been an area where multinational companies have underinvested in systems and technology to report. So I think the first problem with program analytics and the first problem with ROI is actually organizations don't have a good handle on what the total cost is, and that's a real challenge for them. Some are investing, but some are still underinvesting in that area.
Is it able to be measured through performance management?
Sure. Well, the types of assignment, as I said before, Ed, are changing. We have still these traditional long-term assignments that I mentioned before, 3 to 5 years out to a location. And those assignments actually are more predictable, if you will. Typically, there will be a general manager role or a head of HR or a product leader role in a particular market, and a person will be rotating out. And some companies do a very good job of talent planning to say, Ed is now leaving as the product manager in the UK. We need to replace him. Which individual can go on an assignment, which individual would benefit from having that experience also could add something to the role. And that continues, and I think organizations have a pretty good handle around the return on investment for those types of assignments. Where they struggle more, I think, is where assignments become more short-term in nature and more short-term in duration. I think this is a function of the organizations themselves have changed the way they're doing business. Many more organizations today, international business, are running regions. They're not necessarily running countries, or they're running product lines, or they're running business units. So executives in those roles have responsibility for a wide swath of territories in Asia Pacific or in Africa. And in those cases, it's a bit harder for organizations to really get their hands around the costs and also around the nature of those assignments, because they're a bit more fluid than the traditional long-term assignment would be.
With regard to predicting or preventing failure or disruption from an assignment, to what extent are you seeing companies prepare the family and be careful about selection of not only the employee but the family for an assignment, keeping in mind that some assignments today are not traditional and the family stays behind? I'm trying to get to if there is a 100-day plan, a coaching or a mentoring to help ensure success upon going on this assignment, to help ensure predictability of utilizing new skill sets and experiences for our next position. In other words, reducing the risk of failure.
Sure, I think, Ed, it's a good question, because these assignments, as you pointed out before, are very expensive. And I think, in my experience, organizations that really have a best-in-class mobility program have one thing in common, and that is a robust home country coaching process or a robust home country mentoring process, so that organizations do two things. Once a year, as they go through a review of their talent and their mobility program, they look at all the people who are out on assignment or all the people who are in a mobility environment where they're moving around frequently, look at the cost of those assignments and make sure that that still makes sense from a business perspective, but also look at what are we going to do when this person comes back, and bring in the home country coach or the mentor into that process every year to say, what is the plan for Ed when he comes back from the UK? What types of experiences can we leverage and put him in play in an environment in the home country organization where he can be successful? So I think organizations are focused on getting the return on investment from these employees, and I think that's best done when there's an active annual process that involves the home country coach and the mentor to make sure that they have an assignment back in the home country when they return that's productive for both the employee and the employer.
To drill down a little bit to talent development here, mobility integrated with talent development, that's what you're talking about, best in class, is where the mobility piece is not shunted aside as an administrative
right.
or operational thing. And,
right.
Oh, just send it down the hall there, they'll take care of it. The old days, and unfortunately some companies still do that, but many are waking up to the fact that you've got to treat people better. They're spending a lot of money on these assignments, and the risk of failure means the risk of losing potentially millions, never mind loss of face or hurting the brand, and losing a talent to the competitor perhaps. So tell me, from your research and your insight, what percentage of global mobility assignments now are for talent developmental purposes as opposed to a quick fix?
Yeah, I think that most of the assignments today are still devoted towards solving a business problem. As I mentioned before, putting a product manager in place in a particular country or territory, putting an executive in a regional general manager role over a series of countries. Most organizations today, because the assignments are so expensive, are putting their money against concrete business objectives, concrete roles that need specific skills and specific experiences that the employee can bring. Many organizations have developmental programs that are typically offered to more junior employees. And many organizations, including PwC and our own firm, are working very hard to create what we call a culture of mobility. And looking at talent development and talking to our best and brightest stars and our high potential employees and telling them that One of the things that we would expect that they have as they move up into the ranks of the firm and hopefully become a partner one day is to look to have a mobility experience. So I think that more and more companies are looking to integrate talent and deployment very closely. Most companies are still solving business needs. It's interesting, too, Ed, there's also been some external research and surveys that has looked at mobility professionals and asked them where do they think they best fit in the organization. And I think most HR and mobility people would prefer to be aligned with the talent management function within human resources. In fact, most of the time, they're more aligned with compensation and benefits or shared services. But I think most of the mobility professionals would say we prefer to be more closely aligned with the talent development organization within HR.
One of those business routes, from my insight here, is becoming, well, after being involved in mobility operations internally, to enter the structure, if you will, by being HR business partner. Do you see that also?
Yeah, I think many organizations today are looking, obviously, to perform these functions in a hyper-efficient way, right? One of the things about mobility today is that it's a complicated process, right? And to do it well, to do it right, most importantly, to have the organization be compliant with the immigration, the tax rules, the payroll reporting, the compensation rules, the other regulatory rules that impact moving people across border. You need to have involvement of the specialist, the mobility specialist. You need to have involvement of the HR partner, the person that is directly involved in being an HR mentor for that person within the business organization. And then you need a whole host of other specialists. And in our experience, the best run mobility programs are those organizations that have a clear governance structure that outlines the responsibilities of all the different functional organizations within a company to make sure that they know what their role is and what they need to do to make mobility a smooth experience for the employee, but also make it cost-effective and compliant for the organization.
Let's drill down on tax and legal. Many countries outside the U.S., you know, particularly through the OECD area, absolutely clamping down, according to news reports, looking for more revenue from multinationals and watching cross-border visit and how long people are in country and how often. So how do you track all of that? Do you use software or do you use the honor system? You know, how do you track all these people on the move?
Yeah, and it's a great question because I think this is really the fundamental issue that most organizations are wrestling with. I mean, I mentioned at the start of our talk that organizations still have these traditional kind of long-term assignments. And for those people, there's an established process within the organization to kind of track them, right? But the real explosion in mobility today is happening in the context of what we call frequent business travel or frequent business travelers. And this is a real issue today because organizations that have established mobility functions for the last 5 or 6 years or so have been aware of this explosion of people that are moving cross-border, aware of the potential compliance risks that come from that, but are not necessarily seeing that monitoring or actively supervising these frequent business travelers is in their remit as a mobility team. And I think what's happening in the last 2 to 3 years, it's some of the biggest organizations in the world, some of the programs that have the most sophisticated programs are finally coming to grips with the fact that we can no longer ignore this very active group of people that are moving cross-border. The mobility teams are going to senior executives within the organizations. They're asking for budget for more people and more resources. They're asking for budget for technology. They're building business cases around the risks that are coming to the organization, principally immigration, tax, payroll, other reporting risks that are arising. And they're doing a great job, I think, of building a very compelling business case to the organization to say we can no longer put our head in the sand. We've got a corporate responsibility, corporate citizenship to think about. We need to monitor these folks. But the big issue, as you said, Ed, is how do we know where they are? And organizations are struggling with that a little bit. There are some tools out there that use the GPS locator devices that we all have today on our smartphones, have calendar apps. Some organizations are relying, as you said, on the honor system to go to their employees and say, tell us what your travel schedule is like, fill out some information. So I think this is an area that's developing. The one thing that's clear is that tax authorities around the world are hip to this. They know that people are coming into their jurisdiction, they're doing business, their payroll rules are very strict. They're requiring that organizations, in some cases, put people on payroll. Even for as little as 14 days of business travel in a location, you might have to go on payroll in the host jurisdiction. And that's a tricky thing for organizations to manage. So I think frequent business travel is a very significant issue. Organizations are just beginning to get it under their purview and are trying to put processes in place to deal with it.
So global mobility, the profile is rising. I guess we could certainly agree to that. Growth locations are changing. Tell us about the most challenging issues. Is the U.S. a challenge for people in multinational companies?
Yeah, interestingly, Ed, you would think not, right? Because we still enjoy a fairly high standard of living here, and we've got great places to live and work in the U.S. The one thing that I do see on the part of most of our organizations, and particularly it comes to fruition with regard to our most senior executives, and that is with regard to the financial disclosures that are now required for individuals that become U.S. tax residents. There are fairly significant financial disclosure requirements that arise if individuals have foreign financial assets. And I won't go into the details here. They're fairly complex. But suffice to say that individuals that are kind of living and working in the U.S. on a full-time basis, foreign nationals that might be here on visas but having here working for a long time, have significant disclosure requirements to the U.S. government around foreign financial assets, which could include a pension plan, could include a brokerage account in a foreign jurisdiction. And to some of these executives, that process seems fairly intrusive and fairly onerous for them. So we actually do see some executives being fairly wary about taking an assignment to the U.S. But despite that, I think that U.S. still remains a popular location for international assignments. The most tricky locations, Ed, are probably not a surprise to you. China is still a challenging location to deal with, some locations in Asia. And particularly, I think, Africa today. I think most business organizations today see Africa as an enormously large business potential for them. But the challenges of getting people inbound to Africa and also getting Africa employees outbound on assignment is very, very significant. So if you had to ask me yet, I would put Africa at the top of the list of challenging locations for mobility professionals to deal with and organizations to source talent in and out of the continent.
So from a C-suite perspective, the role of global mobility is quite powerful in terms of building diversity in a multinational company. But can you comment on the concept of, say, people who begin working and build themselves up in the organization in, say, Cape Town or Johannesburg or Nairobi, and they go to Sao Paulo or Santiago or Mexico City, or even into the U.S., and then vice versa. Moving talent around like that helps build smarts in an organization, it seems to me. What do you think?
No, I think it's absolutely critical. I spoke before about what PwC is doing as an organization with our own employee group and serving our clients, and this concept of building a culture of mobility. In our view, individuals that can bring different perspectives to bear on client problems, that can bring different life experiences and different points of view to client issues, is absolutely critical. You're going to get a much better answer if you've got 10 people in a room with 10 different perspectives than 10 people that all have the same kind of point of view. And I think one of the ways that you get that is through fostering a culture of mobility and bringing people onto our client engagement teams and into business environments where they can, as you say, bring different experiences and bring smarts to the organization. But certainly working, I think, in multiple jurisdictions over the course of your career, I did it earlier in my career. I found it a tremendous experience, personally helped me grow as a person and grow as a professional. And I think today, looking for people that have these diverse international work experiences, not just from the perspective of living and working overseas, but just dealing with diverse markets and diverse customers, is critically important. And I think organizations that don't focus on it and don't do it right are actually underinvesting in their talent, underinvesting in their business long term.
And so comment a little bit about stakeholders. A lot of people are not at the top level of their organizations, and they strive to be perhaps one day, but they're certainly involved in doing business internationally. What's your view?
Any person in a business environment today should have what we refer to as in our firm as global acumen. We recently introduced a new talent model at PwC for all of our professionals around the world. And one of the most important pillars of that talent model is something that we call global acumen. And that really means having a fluency and having a degree of knowledge and awareness about what is going on in the world, how to be an effective player on a team. I mean, most of our organizations today, Ed, when you get involved in projects, particularly in a client service environment like PwC operates in every day, we're bringing teams together from a dozen countries very commonly to try to solve client problems. And being able to interact with those teams, I think, is critically important. So when I think of the stakeholders, I think it's the business executives that are responsible for those teams. I mean, they want individuals that are working on their business problems that have a very advanced degree of global acumen, that can, you know, interact with their clients or interact with their customers or interact internally to get projects done that are efficient and that have a different point of view. So I think any person in an organization that is in a role that can have an aspiration towards an international assignment should definitely pursue it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a formal assignment, as I said earlier, right? Those are probably more the exception rather than the rule today. But just the opportunity to work in an international environment on a project, I think, is something that everyone should pursue. And I think every manager would be supportive of their employees, even at a junior level, seeking out those kind of experiences and making them part of their development plan on an annual basis.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Peter Clark, the global practice leader for PwC's Global Mobility Group. So we've been talking about rethinking mobility. We've been talking about how to make sure your global talent mobility program is fit for the future, moving people with a purpose, and about the power of mobility to help shape people as well as corporate sustainability. Peter, do you want to sum up?
Yeah, I think that I would encourage all of your listeners to think about their own careers if they are in business and or even in other organizations, NGOs and the like, and to think about mobility as a mainstream experience, as part of their career and something that can help them grow and develop as a professional and I think be tremendously rewarding to them both from a business perspective and a personal perspective. So that would be my advice to all your listeners, Ed. Seek out those mobility experiences and take advantage of them when they come to you.
Thank you, Peter Clark, and thank you, PwC, for being our special guest interview today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, a service of Global Business News. This is Ed Cohen signing off today from San Diego in California.
I think to myself, what a wonderful